The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Advertising Corporation and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found in his Washington Times Community column, Forbidden Siegel Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you hate it when Christians get depressing and apocalyptic, talking about the second coming of Jesus or the end of the world, or even predicting times of persecution, or perhaps expressing concern over greater government control over our lives. And yes, constant preaching can eventually fall upon deaf ears, especially if it's negative, especially if it's pessimistic. Nobody likes to listen to a lot of negative, pessimistic stuff. That is why the arts are also an important ingredient in society. Often the arts will get our attention as nothing else could. For this reason, the arts are also a continual theme of the Bob Siegel Show. And today, we are going to discuss an artistic phenomenon. One of the most controversial movies of our times is the current box office cinema hit, The Hunger Games. Now, I saw this movie last week, and I must say, unlike other futuristic dramas, and I've seen many, unlike others, there was nothing, absolutely nothing about this story that struck me as far-fetched. I don't usually have such a reaction. When I saw Planet of the Apes, I didn't walk out of the theater and go, oh, we better listen to Charlton Heston or our planet's going to be taken over by ugly, smelly, hairy gorillas. No, The Hunger Games was different. The Hunger Games was plausible. I'm not suggesting that this exact scenario will unfold, but some kind of scenario where the control of government grows as the value of human life diminishes. In any event, I'm not sure if film critic Mark Boubin will agree or disagree with that assessment, but I do know he's here today to review not only The Hunger Games, but other new attractions. Mark, welcome to our program.
Thanks for having me, Bob. And of course, we are getting a little apocalyptic today because we're going to talk about the Avengers, which is about someone coming to take over the world and kind of like destroy it, sort of.
But I was able to watch the Avengers and not worry that that was going to happen.
Right, of course, yeah.
It's a little different than The Hunger Games.
Yeah, but The Hunger Games is what would be termed as post-apocalyptic, so I guess we're off the hook on that one.
Right.
So we can talk about that pretty freely. Well, what's interesting is that these both are very successful movies, but The Avengers is an amazing success.
Isn't now, it the highest grossing movie of all time now?
Not
as
yet.
As far as opening weekend goes?
It was the highest opening weekend, and it set like tons of records. But in comparison, now, the Iron Man was the first movie in this series. There was Iron Man 1 and 2. And then in order to prepare us for The Avengers, the Marvel Studios actually made Captain America, the movie Captain America, and the movie Thor. They released them last year.
Didn't they also do one of the Hulk?
The Hulk was prior to the Iron Man movies.
But was it the same actor doing the Hulk?
No, it wasn't. It's changed every time. There's been two Hulk movies, different actors.
So this actor that we saw in the Hulk, we had not seen him as the Hulk before.
Yeah, so three versions, three appearances of the Hulk, three different actors.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you hadn't seen the other movies that were both solely on the individual superheroes, The Avengers wouldn't be as much fun. I did not see Thor, and I felt that wanting while I saw The Avengers. I did see Iron Man. I did see Captain America, which I liked a lot. So that helped, but I was wishing I'd seen all of them because I think it would have made my experience better.
I think it really helped a lot. I saw all of them, and I think it really made a difference, especially since there's interconnections in terms of storyline and references, visual and character contextual references that were made between all of the movies. But what I found really compelling about the Avengers, it was so successful that in its first weekend, 3 days, it made more money than Thor and Captain America both. And as of today, which is only the end of its second week, it made more than both Iron Man movies, which were tremendous successes in their own time. So this is an absolute knockout in terms of how
successful
it is.
Now, will they still make Iron Man and Thor and Captain America movies, or will they be all Avenger movies now, or will they be both?
Well, good question. And given that Hollywood likes to go where the money goes, this movie making more than all of those other movies, I think we can pretty much count on there being an Avenger sequel prior to a Thor or a Captain America.
It's too bad, because if they continued to do both, I think it would continue to make the Avenger movies better.
I agree, and I think they will eventually make another Thor and another Captain America. And actually, that was the plan, to go with Thor and Captain America. There's already an Iron Man 3 on the books, and I believe they're going to start principal photography next year. So that's already slated. But this movie just was a success beyond anyone's imagination. So, like I said, Hollywood and any smart business is going to go the direction that the money points, and it's pointing towards an Avengers sequel.
Now, this woman who was the agent and had been a Russian double agent, had she been in her own movie before? Was she introduced for the first time?
She was in the second Iron Man movie. That's Scarlett Johansson as Black Widow.
I saw Iron Man 1. I did not see Iron Man 2.
Right. Iron Man 1 is probably the best of all of the movies prior to the Avengers, and I liked Iron Man 2 also just because I like the character. And then it'd be a toss-up for me on Thor and Captain America, but those are both movies worth seeing and good movies.
And I was wondering if each superhero would get their due time, but they all seem to be prominent players.
Absolutely.
You know? First, I was going, if Robert Downey Jr. is only in it here and there, it's not going to be as fun, but he was in plenty, but Thor was in plenty, Captain America was in plenty.
Right. I think that is really, I think that's a great thing to say about the director in particular, Joss Whedon. He wrote and directed the movie.
Or the agents hovering over the director counting the lines that their clients have.
Maybe so, but I really think it, you know, Joss Whedon did Buffy the Vampire Slayer. That's what he's most famous for.
And
but
Firefly
he's also. What was that?
Firefly.
Yes, which is one of my favorite shows. All like 8 episodes, unfortunately.
Yeah, short-lived show,
yeah, I can see Fox now going, why did we fire this guy for the third time? Because, he's had 3 shows and he was fired all 3 times. Even with Buffy. Well, actually 4 shows if we count Angel.
I thought Buffy was a big success.
It was on seven years, but it came to an end. Yeah.
And it was the network that ended it?
I don't know. I think I'm jumping to a conclusion. I believe Angel was the first one that was cut off by the network. Then Firefly was not successful enough for them, ended very quickly. And then Dollhouse, which was a show I did not like, was given a second season sort of by, we'll give them a chance because we don't want to make the fans so too angry. But it wasn't that great of a show, in my opinion, so it died a later death.
And then they made a movie after they canceled Firefly. There was a sequel to Firefly, and that movie was kind of a hit.
It did okay.
Just okay.
I mean, it made money, but it wasn't a
not
colossal
Not so okay
hit.
That they were going to bring the TV series
Yeah, and,
series
and basically the movie ended the series. It was the wrap for the series, and I think he did a good job of basically ending the whole thing. I would have liked the show to continue, but oh well. He kills my favorite character in the movie. So then at that point, there was no reason to continue the series. So that's just too bad. But he's a great director. He shows himself as probably one of the great directors of our time in the Avengers. He was able to balance these characters. Great. I mean, I never said to myself, wow, I wish Iron Man had more screen time. And I never said that of the Hulk or of Captain America or Thor. I thought, and when say Thor was on the screen, I wasn't thinking, wow, I really need to see Captain America right now. I just felt like each time they were on screen, I was involved in their particular aspect of the story. And when they were done and we moved on to someone else, I was totally satisfied. He balanced it very well. And what I was actually going to say is he's well-known in comic book circles. He wrote some of the X-Men comic books. The modern X-Men, Joss Whedon did.
Oh, he did that before he went into television?
No, it was actually after.
Simultaneously.
Yes.
I think he was doing Angel while he was writing Astonishing X-Men.
X-Men, okay. Yeah. So, right. I mean, yeah, it would be concurrent, really. I was thinking more in terms of Buffy as being after Buffy that he had moved to comic books. But, yeah. That's a good point. He was doing, because he's been busy all this time with TV and
hey, Mark, and, speaking of our board op, Nick, he confessed to me that he has not watched Lost.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Paul has been working on them. I'm starting to work on them. You've got to start working on them today,
it's
too.
Work. We'll have to have people call in and chastise
We're going to do an intervention. We're going to show up at Nick's door one day.
Right. It's a work in progress.
Right.
I promise.
Well, I was late to the show, but I think I timed it well because I came in at the beginning of the last season when I started watching it.
I'll tell you how you can start, Nick. We did two whole radio shows about Lost, so you can go to my archives and listen to those.
There you go. That was not a shameless plug.
It was an effective plug because I will do that as soon as I get home.
There you go.
There you go. And it's worth listening to. Because, hey, wait a minute. I know someone who was on that show.
Yeah, Mark Boobian was on both of them. That makes it even more shameless.
Shameless, yes.
And going back to the Avengers real quick, Mark, I actually agree with you 100%. That was one of my biggest fears going into the movie, is that I thought there were so many characters, a lot of them played by big name actors, and usually with ensemble casts, as the Ocean's 11 remake and its subsequent sequels have shown, it could be a really hard juggle. And I thought Joss Whedon did such a good job, as probably the best job he could possibly do.
Absolutely.
balancing it, everything. I mean, he completely alleviated my worry, and that was my chief worry.
Right. I felt the same way, because I was actually thinking, well, I really just want another Iron Man movie that's good, and I don't want to watch these other characters that I don't care that much about. So why aren't they making an Iron Man movie? And then he did such a good job of making those characters fun and interesting and compelling, and he used them so well that I forgot all about
And the conflict between the characters was good, too, that the superheroes weren't getting along too well at first.
Right, and that was added well so done. Much to the movie.
It felt natural, too. It felt organic.
Yes, right. It was absolutely natural.
Now, there was another character, and again, the only single movies I saw were Iron Man and Captain America. There was a guy, were they calling him Hawk or the Hawk?
It's Hawkeye.
Hawkeye.
And
now, did he have a movie of his own before?
He had an appearance in Thor.
An appearance in Thor, but yes. He had not had his own movie.
No, so. So the Hawkeye and Black Widow were kind of together. As you could see in the movie, they had some kind of relationship. None of that relationship had been explored prior to the movie. So I thought that was also a nice thing where these are really secondary characters to the Avengers. They are part of the Avengers. But they're not the important Avengers.
What was their reason for using a different Hulk actor? That would seem like a natural to take whoever had been in the last Hulk movie and use him.
You'd think so if they actually got along together, but no, it was Edward Norton, and I had to look this up because I had a discussion
Ed
after
Norton
the movie.
Norton played the Hulk?
He played the Hulk, so you'd think this was great. Actually, it was sort of mediocre.
He's a terrific actor.
Yeah, he's a good actor, but he was underutilized, unfortunately, in the movie. But he was slated to be in this Avengers movie, and he wanted too much money, basically, is what it boils down to, or too much screen time, I don't know. But it was most likely too much money, and they ended up firing him and hiring Mark Ruffalo.
And at that point, they can go, we got Iron Man, we got Thor,
right.
How much
we need
to put out for Hulk?
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, they have to spend all their money on Robert Downey Jr. and basically everyone else. But I thought Mark Ruffalo is the best of all the people who played
the
Hulk.
Yes, he
was
very good.
Because he, you know what he did is he kind of channeled the Bill Bixby version of the Hulk, you know, the Hulk's character. David Banner.
Except in this case, he was playing both parts. Wasn't that him when he turned into the Hulk?
Now, I've read that he actually wore the suit and jumped around.
Yeah, I mean, certainly
stuff.
The face looks the same.
Yeah, I don't know.
Whereas
I've just,
with Bill Bixby,
just, what
they brought in a different
they,
actor, Lou something or other.
Yeah, Lou Ferrigno. Now, Lou Ferrigno did the voice of the Hulk in this movie. He was in original TV series. Lou Ferrigno was opposite Bill Bixby. Lou Ferrigno played the Hulk. Bill Bixby played David Banner. And Lou Ferrigno has actually done the voice in many different incarnations of the Hulk since then. He did the voice in the other two Hulk movies.
I did not know that.
Yeah, and also, of course, they had him do the voice in this one. Now, I would think it would be logical to have him be the one that was in the suit where they did the motion capture, but according to what I've read, it was Mark Ruffalo. Whether or not that's the truth, I don't know. I don't think it really matters.
I suppose they could have computer generated his face onto that. They've done that in movies before.
Exactly. Right, it's like Gollum in The Lord of the Rings where they motion capture Andy Serkis. So in this case, it was supposedly Mark Ruffalo. And once again, I don't think it really mattered. It looked okay. And now one of the things I thought was interesting about the Hulk is he's looked bad in every movie. And they didn't change it. I still thought he looked kind of bad in the Avengers. He was really cartoony looking, and he didn't quite fit in the in terms of realism. And I think they were just copying the style of the past movies and just saying, okay, we'll just do that. So almost like an homage to the previous versions. Or the other possibility being that they were just not capable of making a realistic-looking Hulk. I don't know which it is. I think of the past movies, they weren't capable of making a realistic Hulk. In this one, they were, but they didn't because they didn't necessarily have to. And I thought it looked good in terms of it being cartoony. So that's another kind of win for Joss Whedon in terms of style.
They did a good job showing his out-of-control character, though, when he was all done beating up the bad guy. And then he just hauls off and smacks the guy next to him who's his friend.
Which is another... You know, right, it was
that
awesome.
Was great.
That was off when that absolutely happened. A tear-down moment in the movie. People were just laughing hilariously. And that is Joss Whedon all the way. Once again, I'm going to give him all the credit because this is his humor. This is his style of humor where there's this...
So he gets
really
all the money and you're going to give him all the credit,
yes,
too.
Right. Well, He deserves it. I mean, to me, I was like, oh, this is such a Buffy moment where in Buffy the Vampire Slayer, you have this really dark, serious thing happening, like this big battle or something, and then there'd be some silly, stupid line or something funny the characters would do. This was exactly like that sort of organic moment that he brought in from Buffy and the Vampire Slayer where, you know, there'd be this joke in the midst of something really serious, then this totally ludicrous, almost slapstick joke. And I thought that that was brilliant. There's another moment. It's a little bit of a spoiler, but the Hulk has his due at the end of the movie, and it's the funniest moment, absolutely hilarious.
Well, was this a line about...
It's not
having,
a line, it's
I'm
just
always
something
angry
he does.
Or something like that.
Well, that's a good line too, but no, it's actually after that. It's the end of the movie, the vanquishing of the bad guy.
I know exactly which one you're talking about.
Yeah, and it's just such a great moment. It's worth paying the money for the movie just to go at the end and see that last scene there. It was so hilarious. And like I said, Joss Whedon, he just kind of pulls it out of his hat. It's just so funny in these moments where you just don't expect it to be funny. And then it's absolutely made more hilarious because it's almost inappropriate. And I came away from the movie thinking the Hulk is my favorite character, the character I've hated more than any other in all of the superhero movies. I can't stand the Hulk. And here he's so... Such a scene stealer in the Avengers. If there could be a scene stealer, it was the Hulk.
And you never used to like Batman, but the Dark Knight made you more of a Batman.
Exactly.
Fan.
Yeah,
so
it's like that.
Slowly, a piece at a time, entering the world of the superhero.
Right, I guess so. Hey, never thought I would ever say that I liked the Hulk. I never did. And now I'm saying it.
Hey, you want me to get into Lost? I can help you get into comic books. I'm just saying.
You're not the only one. We have another friend who's probably owns all of the Avengers.
Oh, our friend Tim. Oh, my
gosh.
Yeah,
the originals. Yeah. So,
Yeah, that's not me. That is not me.
Yeah, he's definitely hardcore. And I've learned a lot about comic books from him, to his credit. So I think that's to his credit. What would you say? Yes, that's to his credit.
Well, you know, if I knew everything about every single comic book in the world, I don't know that I'd be doing a whole lot of bragging about it.
Yeah, right. Well, he's kind of a happy-go-lucky guy, so... We appreciate that about him. So now, in terms of, I usually come on and I like to talk about Christianity in these movies. And in this movie, now, there's not a ton to talk about. There's a few things here and there. But one of the things I really liked, and not for the obvious reason, is this line that Captain America delivers in the middle of the movie, that Captain America recognizes God. His line is...
Oh, that's right. They say these people are like gods. And then
he says, there's only one God, and I'm pretty sure he doesn't dress like that in reference Thor's brother. Yes.
That was a great line.
The villain. Yeah, a great line. And he means it, though, you know, and that's great. Now, one thing about Joss Whedon is he's an avowed atheist. And
so that was interesting for him to put a line like
exactly,
that in there.
Exactly. He puts a line in it. So now, again, to his credit, I guess I'm tooting Joss's horn. I think he needs to send me a check at this point.
No kidding. I was going to ask if you were on Whedon's payroll here.
Boy, oh boy. But he's probably going to be embarrassed if he hears this because I've thrown so much into his plate. So, okay. So the character says this line, and it's great, and it's nice for me to hear it as a Christian because I like hearing stuff like that. I don't, you know, people tearing down Christianity in movies, oh, that's a bummer, but it happens. Here's a nice line, great. But it's not in there because it's a nice line. It's in there because that's what Captain America would say.
It fits his character.
Exactly. It's exactly what he'd say. So that's why it's in the line.
And you got to hand it to a director who says, instead of being politically correct,
right,
even though I don't believe in God, I'm going to be consistent with this character.
Exactly. Exactly. And so there we go. This shows that he really cares about the character, cares about the movie. So I think that's another reason the movie is so good, because Joss Whedon invested himself in it, and I think all of the actors really seem to have invested themselves in it as well, because it's just, they're really good in this movie. Everybody's just top-notch and phenomenal. Another thing about the movie is another element in terms of looking at it from Christian eyes. One of the things that I kind of question is, now there's, before the Avengers are really solidified as a group, they're kind of rugged individualists. They're fighting each other. They're not coming together as a team. And Agent Coulson, who's been the one character that was in every single of the previous movies, all the Iron Mans and all of the Thor and Captain America.
Agent Coulson, is that Samuel Jackson?
No, I can't remember the actor's name. I'd have to look it up, unfortunately. But it's his right-hand man, basically. And Samuel Jackson's right-hand man.
Oh, the guy
man.
Who wanted the baseball trading cards.
Exactly, the trading.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
That's another. Yeah, okay. I'll stop saying the J word now. Anyway, the thing about Agent Coulson is he's sadly he's killed in the movie, and I was actually very bummed because I liked him from the previous movies. But it's on his death that the Avengers becoming a team sort of revolves.
That's what inspires them.
Yes, exactly. Now, why is it that a death? Somebody dying, somebody sacrificing themselves, because Agent Coulson did sacrifice himself. Why is it that we need something like this to motivate us or to bring along, basically, ultimately bring salvation?
Well, there's a shock value in death. Death can wake us up. Death
right?
can bring us back to saneness.
That's a good point. Yeah, and I think that may be what Joss Whedon was driving at. But again, from Christian's eye, from Christian eyes, I can see why a sacrifice, a substitutionary, or a self-sacrifice is imperative, because that brings us closer to God. And there's more to it than that, even. But why is it in a movie by an atheist? Why is that the culminating event of creating the Avengers? And I think that's just a kind of a question. You do have an answer there, Bob. That's a good answer. And I suspect that Joss Whedon would give an answer like
that. Again,
but still,
we are made in the image of God, and if somebody chooses not to believe in God, that doesn't change the fact that they're in God's image.
Right, that's a good point.
They may not agree that they're in God's image, but they are.
Right.
And so they're still made the way God made them, which means things about God are still going to come out, particularly in their artistic work.
Exactly, and that's one of my kind of theories in terms of how I look at movies, too. So, yeah, and that's a very good point. I agree with you wholeheartedly.
And you know, it's interesting. There's so many precedents for this in history, not just the obvious one, of course, of Jesus dying for us. But my favorite is in early Rome. After Rome even became Christianized, they continued to have the gladiator games. And it was like an insanity, because if ever there were people that should understand that gladiatorial combat to the death is wrong, it's Christians.
Right, right.
Even the pagan Roman Empire would have said we're a very just empire. They would have told you, a citizen of Rome would have told you murder was wrong. But if you asked him about the gladiator games, he would say, oh, well, that's different. That's just a sporting event. But one day there was a monk, a lowly monk named Telemachus, who ran out, put himself between the two gladiators at the great Roman Colosseum. The audience booed him and hissed him. It was like somebody breaking up the Super Bowl.
Right.
They killed him, and there was a shock value in that. And a hush and silence came over the Colosseum, and they never again held a gladiator game after Telemachus died because of the shock value of what he had done.
Right, that's very impressive, yeah. And in this movie, of course, Coulson was somebody they knew personally, so the shock value would have been even stronger for them. But their connection and their love and their
caring
for the guy.
Yeah, because it was a friend.
Yeah, exactly. So there is something to be said for that. Now, another aspect, I think the thematic element that we were hit hardest with, I think it's even stated outright in the movie, is this is about teamwork. You know, the movie is about them getting together and being a team. Now, what's interesting about this theme, even though it's so obvious and so kind of, you know, almost mundane because it's so blatant, this really does fly in the face of our cultural and historical backbone as Americans. We're raised as individualists. Not just individualists, but I used the term earlier, rugged individualists. That's just how Americans are. That's what we're like. And Iron Man sort of epitomizes that in this film, and even in the other movies. You just see him as that kind of person. He went out on his own and built the suit and rejected all of the corporation in the Iron Man movies, his own corporation, to, you know, go out on his own and be the hero. And how much harder is it for him to be on a team because he's such an individualist? That's one of the key aspects to this. And I think another interesting thing about this, a hero, practically by definition, saves the world alone. You don't have heroes very often. You have a hero, like Telemachus, for example, who you just cited, Bob, alone, who saves the world.
And it's usually not somebody who wants to be a hero. They are so high in conscience, they just have to do the right thing.
Which is actually what Iron Man, exactly. He didn't want to be a hero, but he had to be because that was just the situation he was thrust into, and his morality had compelled him to become one. Okay, so there, in this movie, though, we have the rugged individualist, and then we've got the Hulk, who absolutely cannot be on a team. It's not that he doesn't want to be. He can't be.
Kind of a bull in a china cabinet.
Yeah, exactly. So here's what's interesting about this. It's not just that this movie is about teamwork, but it's about teamwork in the most impossible of all situations, the most impossible of all people. So what is it saying about the imperative of working with other people? And I think that's it actually goes from mundane to compelling. Like, initially I thought, oh yeah, just teamwork, right? I'm told that a baseball team, football team, teamwork. But here we have it, just, it's such a stark contrast to the individualist that the individuals that we're presented with in the film, that I think it's much deeper than just, oh yeah, whatever. It's a really powerful and moving theme when you kind of think about it. And I think one of the reasons that we see this theme is because as individuals, we really can't accomplish everything alone. We need other people. We need help. And we need to help others. There are people that need our help. So this working together makes us stronger, just because there's some kind of inbuilt need in our humanity, in our created souls. We need other people.
Right. And like we said, one who wants to be a true hero is actually not even going to have that desire. They're not going to want to be a hero. They're going to just be made into a hero because they did the right thing at the right place at the right time.
Right.
Maybe they did it kicking and screaming. But on the other hand, once somebody does become a hero, then their ego could take over.
Right.
And that's what we kind of... I'm a hero, and then the trick is to know when to get out of the way and work with others. Heroes and realize that I'm not the best person to fill in all the cracks here. I need assistance.
Absolutely, yeah, and that's a very good point, that the ego has to be kind of put aside so that people can work together.
Well, okay, my guest today is Mark Boobian. We are here discussing The Avengers, and we're also going to discuss The Hunger Games, two hit movies. The Hunger Games is not as much of a mega hit as The Avengers, but it's an extremely important movie. We'll be discussing that too when we return to The Bob Siegel Show.
Call Bob now at 888-344-1170. That's toll free, 888-344-1170. Bob may have strong opinions, but he also likes to hear what you have to say.
So, you're more beautiful.
This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call WNS Electric Incorporated.
WNS specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, WNS takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for WNS Electric, Incorporated, license number 480-539, WNS Electric.
Looking to build your own website without a lot of cost and trouble? Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to tell you about Web Studio. Web Studio allows people to create their own websites simply and easily without knowing HTML. With Web Studio, you avoid the learning curve of front page and the expense of a web designer. Web Studio has 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and everything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com.
If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out Bob's weekly column for Washington Times Communities. Bob is also a regular contributor for San Diego Rostra and San Diego Newsroom. And don't forget his website, www.bobsiegel.net, S-I-E-G-E-L, bobsiegel.net. Here, you can download past radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and get information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net.
Welcome back to our program. I'm here with film critic Mark Boobian. We've been talking about the Avengers, and we are going to make a turn soon and talk about the Hunger Games, but more on the Avengers first.
All right. Thanks, Bob. Well, I think we can go ahead and wrap up the Avengers. The only thing I would say about it is go see the movie if you haven't seen it yet. It is wonderful. It's a great, fun movie. The perfect kind of popcorn summer flick that has more to offer than just a good time. There's a little bit to think about in this movie, too.
And would you agree that even if you hadn't seen Iron Man and Thor and Captain America, obviously it's a better experience having seen them, but you're not going to be lost if you haven't seen
them,
are you?
Not at all. Yeah. Not at all. There's one thing that happens in the movie where I was confused and it wasn't well explained because I saw Thor. There's a little bit of there's a little mystery at the end of the Thor movie, and they should have explained it better in the Avengers movie, and they didn't. And if you don't see the Thor movie, you won't have that hanging over your head. That would be my only real criticism about the movie, is that he kind of let that one slide a little too much. But that's okay. If you haven't seen it, won't bother you.
Okay, so The Hunger Games.
The Hunger Games. Okay, so this is, as you said, Bob, this is a very controversial movie. I think the most controversial movie I have seen in a long time. It's in its own right. Now, I've read the books. I read all three books because my daughter, who's a young adult, they're young adult novels, and she was reading them. They were popular, so I picked them up because I like to know, you know.
How many are there in the books?
There's three. It's a trilogy, and I think the story is complete after the three. So it's three and it's done. I really enjoyed the books. They're very dark, very heavy. And surprising that they're even popular because of how heavy they are. I would categorize them as a very post 9/11 type of book, even the movie I would put in that category, because it's dark and because it's taking a look at the darker side of humanity a little more willingly than we did before 9/11, specifically in popular arts. So I think that 9/11 has affected the arts, and this is one of the places we're seeing it. This movie deals with the notion of youth being forced to fight to the death in a completely
modern-day version of the Gladiators.
Yes, exactly. Now, I was going to point that out. You beat me to it. Do we have the story of Telemachus being retold? Might be a way to look at this, because we have Jennifer Lawrence playing Katniss Everdeen, who goes to the Hunger Games and has to fight in order to save her sister, who was called. She takes her sister's place and goes to fight to the death, knowing that that's she's going to die.
That's the big hook for teens and young adults who like this. It seems so far-fetched because we are not used to that as a culture, but that was a very commonplace in ancient Rome.
Yeah.
And then given where we're headed as a culture, I'm not sure it's that far-fetched to think that could be in our future too.
Right. Well, especially in the context that it's put in this movie. One of the comments that I had thought prior to your talking about Telemachus was that reality TV is another thing that the books and the movie take on. Pretty obviously, when you see the movie, they're drawing from reality TV. And if reality TV was allowed to, I would bet anything that they would have gladiatorial games on reality TV right now if it was legal.
Well, you know, and you have the game show host in this movie who's interviewing the contestants, knowing that only one of them's going to live. So, and he interviews them just like they're celebrity.
Right.
Oh, yeah, great. It was a cross between Survivor and American Idol.
Right.
I was thinking about both those reality shows while I was watching this.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, right. And I think they did a much more effective job in the movie than in the book of conveying that element, because you can see it, you know, the visual, seeing it on the movie screen as opposed to reading in a book, because the reality TV is that same visual medium. I think it comes across much better and it's more effective and I think more disturbing. Creepy would be.
Well, and that was consistent with the gladiators, too. The gladiators, you had to be a slave to be a gladiator. But gladiators were heroes. Gladiators were pampered. They were popular. People would root for them.
Right.
It's just creepy how realistic this was.
Yeah. Right, exactly. And I think that that's a really good point. That is this a possibility for our future? Now, one of the other things that makes this a post-9/11 novel is that it was written in response to the Iraq War. Not only. That's not its only thing. Obviously, we've been talking about reality TV here, but the author is addressing the Iraq War because they're seeing the young people going to war that the author thinks is an unjust war and dying. For what? If it's an unjust war, for nothing. So that's the author's viewpoint. And I personally saw a media sensationalization of the war. Now, in the previous Gulf War, in the first Gulf War, certainly I saw that much more, because the media was for that war. The Iraq War, this time around, not so much, but still some sensationalization. So that, I think, also makes it into the novel and makes it into the movie.
See, now, I would have seen that more in Vietnam when there was a draft. In the Iraq War and the first Persian Gulf War, it was an all-volunteer army.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, they were talking about other things with the government, which maybe is not as much what the author intended. But it certainly struck me is the growing control of the government and the reason these kids got into that lottery where the names could be selected was because they were purchasing food from the government and that made them more obligatory to what the government wanted out of them.
Right. Maybe that is an element that the author was trying to convey.
That hit me much more. I wouldn't have even thought about the Iraq War at that point.
Right. Not at that point. And I agree with you that the draft is obviously a more direct reference.
That's a different element, because even though I believe there are just wars and wars that aren't just, I do have a problem with the draft, because I think in any war, a person ought to be able to decide for themselves if they believe in the war
and
fight for it.
Right. Exactly. But, you know, as you've talked about, though, this being something that you can see coming up in the future, not too far future, certainly the draft is something that I think every generation that's of the age of the draft worries about. And when there's a war going on, that would definitely be a concern, especially if I thought the war was unjust. So,
but even in ways that the government takes care of our health care, and now with the nationalized or headed toward nationalized health care, we're starting to hear about the way we eat, that maybe I'm hearing advocates say, we shouldn't be allowing people to eat hamburgers or eat too much cholesterol. And in San Francisco, they weren't allowing McDonald's to make Happy Meals unless they put a piece of fruit or a vegetable. I mean,
yeah,
I'm
that
sorry.
Made it so much better.
What frickin' fracking business is it of the government? What people are going to feed their own kids? It just seems a direction that we're heading with just these ideas of people being so arrogant that they want to take over every little piddly detail of our lives.
Well, I can tell you, Bob, we're not just heading there. We've arrived.
We are.
Sense.
Yeah.
My daughter's birthday is right around the time school starts. So her first week of school on her birthday, we gave her a candy bar. This was a few years ago. And she's at lunch. She's going to take her birthday present, the candy bar, for her lunch, something to enjoy for her birthday. The teacher came up and said, you can't eat that because that's against the rules.
Oh, for Pete's sake.
Yeah, and now if they didn't tell us that was against the rules, it was a new rule they didn't instigated. And now we can't get, you know, that.
And I'm sure they mean well. But
they
there's
did,
such
but
a self
so
righteousness where they yeah. pat themselves on the back. Just the arrogance of we know what you should do with your life better than you do.
Right. And certainly we can see a lot of that in the Hunger Games. Arrogance is one of the key elements of the post-apocalyptic dictatorial society. They are arrogant.
Now, when you say post-apocalyptic, you mean, of course, the war, the big war has already happened.
Right.
So it's after the apocalypse.
Yes, it's after the end of the world, so to speak, and society has collapsed, and then it's been rebuilt into this dystopian society. That's the typical post-apocalyptic novel or storytelling that we see. So, yeah. Now, the other thing about Hunger Games is, now, we're talking about some of the controversies, some of the things. The Hunger Games was controversial even before the movie was released. One of the funny things, not necessarily funny, but one of the interesting things that happened prior to The Hunger Games being released, another movie that almost nobody has probably heard of, but the press and the movie industry was really behind, is a movie called Bully, which was a documentary about bullying.
Oh, I did hear about that.
Yeah.
That had quite an impact on people.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's great that you did hear about it.
Now, I didn't see the movie, but I've heard a lot of scuttlebutt on the news about it.
Yeah, I haven't heard about it. Now, I think that it may be actually the brilliance of the producers of Bully that they made this an issue, and that may have risen it into the public eye a little more. I don't know, but it seems sincere to me, though, when it happened, that the movie Bully is a documentary where they actually filmed real teenagers, young adults, 7th, 8th, 9th graders, bullying, being bullied, and the things they say. They talk about it in the movie. It's all real life. It's a documentary. And they say bad words when they're talking. So the movie got an R rating. Well, here's The Hunger Games. This is a movie about kids murdering each other in an arena for entertainment purposes. And it gets a PG-13. So we have murder versus saying the F word every once in a while. How can we justify these two ratings? And so it became this big furor in the press. And so this is just before The Hunger Games was released, and obviously just before Bully was released. And I thought it was really interesting because I knew The Hunger Games was going to be a controversial movie because I had read the book. And I didn't know, but I had hoped it would be controversial because it deserved to be.
Did you think the movie did a good job?
Yes, I think it did. Yeah. Every movie I see when I've read the book, I feel like
the book's always going to be better.
And there's more detail and stuff. But they did a fine job. And boy, it was popular. But there's been tons of different controversies about it. So even this thing with Bully, which is almost like meta, what we refer to in the computer industry as meta controversy, a controversy that happens outside of the story. It's not even about the story. It's just about what's happening in society in real life. So I thought that was a really interesting thing that this movie would be controversial ahead of time. I also saw some really ludicrous things that they're talking about. Now, here's a movie where we've already discussed some of the political elements. We've only touched on the very surface. I mean, a movie about kids killing each other is going to be heavy. I'm sorry, no matter what rating you give it, it's going to be a heavy movie. And there's something there to be said and something we should be looking at. So what does the press talk about? How much Jennifer Hudson weighs, the Jennifer Lawrence, I'm sorry, not Jennifer Hudson, but how much she weighs. That's her body image. The press actually talked about
what
she looked like
of
in the
that?
Movie. Absolutely none. It's because other actresses are very thin and svelte, and Jennifer Lawrence is not quite as thin as the standard Hollywood
Barbie. She didn't look overweight
Barbie
to
image.
Me.
She doesn't.
That never
of
once
course
crossed
she doesn't.
My mind.
Right. But it became a controversy. And then when people are talking about it being a controversy, like I'm doing right now, it becomes a discussion about whether the controversy is justified. Was she fat or not? And then, you know, how stupid it is for people to think that she even was in the first place. So this controversy kind of gets out of hand, and it ends up distracting us from the real issue as to why is she in this arena in the first place killing people? Who cares what she looks like? Why is she there killing people? Why was she forced? how close are we to that? Well, the question you raised at the beginning of the show, Bob, how close are we
and,
to this?
And I don't
happening?
Think the press always gets it. I think we're going to hear a lot of things like, oh, it's such a violent movie, or why did it get a PG? It's so right. violent, so violent. Okay, but the violence is essential to the story. And the better question is, are we as a society and a government headed in a direction like this? See, I think usually teens and young adults aren't interested in politics.
Exactly.
If you'd have met me when I was in college, I couldn't tell you the difference between a Republican or a Democrat, and I wouldn't have cared.
Right.
But right now, to say there are different philosophies in politics, some about how big or how large the government's role should be in our life, what a great four-way to just get kids to start discussing this, to start with the arts, which is where it's very important to them.
Yeah, exactly. And to start with characters and story that they like so that they do become interested, or even if they don't know it, just to be thinking about these things. Why did Katniss choose to go into the arena instead of her sister? What was going through her head that she'd go die for her sister?
Yeah, and talk about self-sacrifice and Christian elements.
Exactly, and why do you like her for doing that? And then there's the love story aspect. Now, this is, I think, one of the big draws of the book. There's this love triangle that occurs in the story, and that lasts through all three books. And from what I
saw, because that guy that she left at home likes
exactly.
her, too.
Exactly, and so, yeah, and it was a much bigger part of the book, actually, but I think they still did a fine job in the film. But most of the audience, I went opening night with my daughter, who was there because she did like the love triangle. And I can tell you that since most of the audience was young girls about her age in junior high and early high school, they were there for the same reason. That's what they liked about
now,
the story.
Now, the young men are not responding to this as much as the young women
there
are?
Still were a lot of boys, but the primary audience was girls. And so...
Did you have interesting conversations with your daughter after
yeah,
the movie?
Yeah, we have, yeah.
What did it mean to her? What kinds of themes did she take away?
That's a good question. She was, interestingly enough, she's read all three books, and what happened is she decided to read them all over again, starting the night we saw The Hunger Games, because she was so excited about it. So she just recently finished the last book, and she said to me the other night, I'm not happy or satisfied with the end. There's something I don't feel right with the end of the book. And at the end of the book, does she end up with the right guy or not? My daughter's kind of like, it's not even really a big deal to her at the end. And that's one of the big draws of the film, who the girl is going to fall in love with. And yet it's not that important by the time we get to the end of the story. And my daughter's upset by that. What is it that she's bothered by that? Why? And I said, why are you bothered by that? Why do you think the author would have downplayed this aspect that had been so important early on? And why is it not important now? What's happened between them? And those questions require spoilers to answer. I don't necessarily want to give them away because that's for two movies from now. But they're good questions. And I think something else to talk about is, now, this movie actually had a very dissatisfying ending, in my opinion, as well. And they just sort of are on the train at the end of the movie. I won't say who they are, but they're just sort of on the train at the end of the movie, and the movie ends. And what, you know, what the heck?
Well, part of that, of course, it is the first, you said, the first of a trilogy.
Right, and the next book or the next movie will take over exactly where this one
but
left
I also
off, but...
like art in its own right to be bittersweet.
Exactly.
A story does not have to be the first installment of a trilogy for me to appreciate that they leave some things up in the air and they don't neatly tie everything up with a bow.
Right, but would you say that bittersweet is popular?
It's not, and yet this
right.
movie is popular.
Yes.
How is this one doing at the box
very
office?
Very well.
It's not... Nothing now, like the Avengers, but it's doing very well.
It was doing better than the Avengers until this week. The Avengers has almost passed it, but it still made a substantial amount of money.
And it's such a more important movie. As you can tell, if you've been listening to the whole show, we both really liked both movies. But as far as one of them being extremely important to our social conscience.
And having a
The
really
Hunger Games
meaty,
is that movie.
Yeah, absolutely. So, exactly. And so, for this movie and the books, the story gets darker and harder and harder and harder as we go along. It becomes less and less satisfying and emotionally, I don't know what the right word is, but joyful would be But it's not even joyful in the beginning, so I can't use that word, but something along those lines.
And yet it was still an entertaining movie. It held my attention. They had some funny lines in it. Woody Harrelson, I'm not a big fan of Woody Harrelson, but he was very good in this
movie.
He's
okay. I envisioned that character differently, so I was influenced by that. Yeah, but that's okay. I thought he was a good choice. I laughed out loud when he appeared on the screen because I was so surprised that they had chosen him. But, you know, that was fun for me because I know Woody.
That's
Harrelson.
What Mark gets for making sure he knows nothing about a movie before he goes to see it.
Exactly, but it was worth it.
He didn't even know Woody Harrelson was in the darn thing.
Yeah, now another controversial aspect of this movie. Sometimes I think critics don't get it at all. Now, here's Fox News. Fox News, now I would say that they're kind of conservative if I had to make a guess as to one or the other. So this author, James Pinkerton, wrote the movie review for Fox News. You're thinking it's going to go conservative. And it is. It's conservative. He's being critical in this article of the U.S. government. He says the contemporary U.S. government, meaning I would think the Obama administration, if I had to make a guess, that's who he'd be critical of. The contemporary government, as well as our popular culture, comes in for a drubbing.
Right, whereas the liberal critics are going to say, oh, it's back to those darn George Bush years.
No, just listen, though. Why? How is it coming in for a drubbing? Because a new generation, having grown up in the midst of futile foreign wars and bailouts of billionaires, even as the middle class continues to erode, they might wish to make changes to our system, like some of the 99% or the 1% want to. I don't know which percentage it is.
Wait,
now,
are you still on the Fox News one?
That's the Fox News one.
That doesn't sound like a very conservative review.
Exactly. Yeah. It's totally liberal.
Well, the Fox people would have been against the bailouts, but they wouldn't have been talking about futile wars.
Beckless, futile foreign wars.
Well, some would say they become futile when we have more lawyering and less.
Yeah, at some point, but that's not the context of this
review. Well, you know, actually, I mean, honestly, Fox does tilt to the right, but they have a lot of liberals on Fox, and they show both sides. The other networks just go ballistic because they even show both sides. That's what drives them nuts.
Right, but I don't think that's where he was headed. I think he was trying to be conservative and just couldn't because, I want to rally him to my side because this movie's popular. So, you know.
Well, I could relate that not just to the Obama administration, but any administration that takes too much. I had real serious problems with the Patriot Act, too, and that began under the Bush administration.
Right.
I don't like any government taking that much control over our lives.
Right, I agree. And look, who in their right mind would name some organization the Department of Homeland Security? Didn't they read 1984? Give me a break, man. So I'm with you there. So any administration can become evil no matter what. It doesn't matter
because
what side
Because absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Exactly. So, and I think that's another thing that we see in the Hunger Games. We're not told that the president is liberal or conservative at any point. It's just that he is evil.
No,
He's a bad man.
It's better that way. It should just be a generic government with too much control, and we should realize that it's something that can come from any ideology.
Exactly.
That makes it a more lasting work of art.
Right, and what's very interesting is we start to see how the rebels, the people that are fighting the government, are not necessarily much better than the government they're fighting. And that is a spoiler. I apologize, but I think it doesn't give too much of the story away, but it's a worthwhile point to make that no matter which side you stand on, you have to be careful about the leaders that you've chosen and about the battles that you're going to fight, because you can go down the drain just as fast as the other guy. And so The Hunger Games, a very, very good, very interesting book. Now, in terms of Christianity, I think that there is a lot that this book has to offer. Unfortunately, we can't talk too much about it because, once again, it requires the end of the whole series, not just the beginning. But I will ask this question now. The substitutionary sacrifice
that the sister makes for the younger sister.
Right. That is one of the things that draws us into the book.
Yeah.
Why is that?
It makes her the likable character. Yes.
That she is. That's a very important thing.
Because this was such an apathetic society devaluing human life that she was valuing human life. Even to the point of saying, my sister she wasn't saying it this way, but my sister is made in God's image and is as important, if not more important, than I am.
And all of the work that she's doing, all of the social stuff that we see, pales to her in comparison to that one life.
And it just threw that whole social strata into a tizzy. Well, the time went by far too quickly, as always, Mark. We did have a caller who called while we were talking about the Avengers, who was in a hurry for us to get onto the Hunger Games. Nick, our board op, told him to hold on, but he dropped the call before we got to the... Well, as you can hear, my friend, we got to the Hunger Games and did spend a lot of time on it, so patience is a virtue. We'll always get to you, and we'll get to you next week. We'll see ya.
The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.